I think between the year 500 and 700, the only evidence of there being urban centres is a single spoon.
That's one guy waiting for the restaurant to be invented. Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. Today, we celebrate our 100th episode! Yes, we began the day receiving an official birthday telegram from Queen. Not the Queen, from Queen. And not the band Queen, from Queen, a cat called Queen that lives in the bins around the back of my flat. I'm not entirely sure where she learned Morse code or indeed got a telegraph. But there you go. We have also been graced with a 21 water gun salute and celebrated with a large cake with the number 100 iced on top of it. I didn't know urinal capes came in such large tiers. We're shortly going to be graced by a parade in honour of the podcast's milestone achievement, although given we haven't actually pre-cleared this with the local authorities, we think the floats may currently be held up in traffic somewhere on the Finchley Road. But never mind. We'll soon be settling in for an evening of cultural delights, including a performance by Nena of 99 Luftballons. 99 is German for 100, right?
Yes, mate.
Yeah, cool. And finally, it'll be a late night screening of 101 Dalmatians 3, the highly selective rabies outbreak.
Oh, is that not 104 Dalmatians?
Did they keep doing the Ocean's 11 thing? Yeah. More Dalmatians. Yeah. No Dalmatian may ever die.
I mean, if they did the full Ocean's 11 thing, there's got to be a bit where Cruella de Vil goes, what if I pretend to be Cruella de Vil?
Yeah. And they go back to like 97 Dalmatians, but they're all women, and then they can't breed because there's no male Dalmatians anymore. Anyway, beside me, as you've heard already, is my very own shaggy dog, foaming at the mouth and chewing happily on his bone. It's Ben van der Velde.
Hello, everyone.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. I mean, if you're celebrating happy birthday, technically every show is a birthday.
Yeah.
Happy centenary.
Yeah, that's true. Or, like 1 year in podcast is 100 episodes.
Is it?
Is that how it's like dog years?
Yeah. Hang on, one year is 100 episodes.
No, this has definitely been 2 and a bit years that we've been doing this.
Yeah, exactly, because that means, you know, like, the Nerdist podcast is only 10 years old and oh, my brain can't do that maths.
They could probably do it.
They probably could. What I'm most fascinated by on this is that this is our centenary episode, and to really replicate the feeling that you will have when you're 100 years old, we don't have a guest.
Yes.
Because all your friends will be dead and none of your family will want to visit you.
You'd be in a home somewhere. And, you know, we'll all be dead by then anyway.
Yeah.
We'll be too old to join the Mad Max style gangs that are going to be roaming this lawless planet. Yes, we've decided to have an episode, just the two of us, to celebrate. We are currently supping champagne from our wooden spoons, which are... We'll clink gently across the mic. There you go. I don't know if that's even going to come across.
That was magnificent Foley work.
Wasn't it? It's kind of weird to think we've done 100 of these.
It's really bizarre.
What have we been doing with ourselves? You've had a baby in the time.
I've had a baby. You've written plays. The world's gotten worse.
I've bought a flat.
Yeah. I've got a horrible theory. But a few years ago, I started being part of a Newcastle United podcast. Mm. And that hugely coincided with my team's fortunes going down the toilet severely. When we started doing this podcast...
shortly after the Brexit vote. In fact, it was around the time of the Brexit vote we discussed doing it in the first place.
Yeah.
And then Trump got elected.
Yeah, and in the same year, literally everybody died.
Yeah.
So...
Were we the opening of the Ark of the Covenant?
Yeah, we might be.
And the world is that German dude whose face melted.
Oh, God, it really might be. We have met some cool people, though. We've met professors of neuroscience and...
Wine experts,
people... I was about to say hip-hop artists, and I couldn't sound more like someone's dad.
Recording artists of various media.
Yeah, recording artists and writers.
Wrestling
and
promoters.
Yeah.
Lots of comedians, of course.
Yeah, magicians.
Yeah, other podcasters.
Well, yeah, let's hello other podcasters.
Hi.
And we've, well, I hope you'll agree, we've got slightly better at recording. I listened back to some of episodes 1 to 10 the other week, and they are shoddy.
Yeah. There are some ropey moments in there. Let's remember some of them now.
Yeah.
Like the dead, the in memoriam section of an awards ceremony.
Yeah, okay, in memoriam.
Episode with Simon Watt.
Yeah.
One of our favourites to record, which came out shit. I've really enjoyed going back. I've been currently editing our Best of 2018 episode, which will be out very shortly. And it's nice going and clicking on an episode and going, oh, hang on, there was that fact was from this show.
Mm-hmm.
Like discovering that there's an element called astatine, which destroys itself if it exists in too large a quantity.
That is absolutely your favourite fact, isn't
it? One of absolutely, hands down, is one of my favourite things that I've learned. That Sweden had a February the 30th is a very, very favourite one, but in such a shoddy way.
Yeah.
That you discovered Herlock Sholmes.
Oh my god, yeah.
The fake detective.
I really enjoyed all the stuff that we did with Johnny Singer, all about the world's worst sporting rules.
Mm, yeah.
Like, I'm still trying to understand the rules about that game between Barbados and, I think it was, Trinidad and Tobago.
Something
it wasn't
like
Trinidad
that.
And Tobago, it was Barbados and Grenada.
Yes, that's right.
About where they basically put a golden goal in real time, essentially. I'm not going to try and explain it now, because if you listen to the podcast, it takes me 5 minutes to explain it and I still get it wrong.
And that's 5 minutes out of the 15 we edited.
Yeah, but essentially, the last 7 minutes of that game end up with two teams trying to score own goals and the referee running round and round the centre circle going, what the hell is going on?
Yes. I remember from the same episode, the existence of the play to a finish rule.
Oh yeah,
where they had matches that lasted 3 hours and 20 minutes and things like that.
Yeah, and it got to the extent where fans were basically booing the players and demanding that the referee essentially submit.
Yes.
Yeah, big shout out to that podcast. That podcast enabled me to do a tour of the FIFA Museum
yes.
in Zurich. So,
and just in general, big shout out to everybody who's ever listened to us. Currently listen to us, people who support us on Patreon. If you're just people who listen to us and give us the odd like now and again, or a retweet, or write a nice review, you can still do all of that stuff if you haven't by visiting our iTunes page or going to worstfootforwardpodcast.com, where you'll find all of the links to the various social media sites. But yes, thank you very much to everybody who's enabled us to keep going.
Yeah,
200 episodes.
It's really sweet. The most fun thing with podcasting, as ever, is listening to you guys, and not listening to you guys, listening
no,
to
us. No, they listen to us.
They listen to us. That's how this.
Who have you been listening to?
Mate, this has been.
Do you have like a side like podcast version of this, which is like Big Brother's Bit in the Side? It's like the after podcast reviews.
Yeah, it's me and your husband. And then.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, and then your husband has a thing with my wife where it's like Big Brother's Bit on the Side, Bit on the Side.
Nice. So this week we've decided we're going to do the world's worst century as our topic in all its various incarnations and interpretations to celebrate 100 episodes. And Ben, why don't we kick off with your stuff? Between us, we'll decide what our winner is. It's going to be a very democratic choice, this.
Yeah.
We're trying to preserve democracy in some small shred in these trying times.
I mean, the temptation is to say that it's going to be like about the 24th century when, as you alluded to, we're just going to be living on Mars too.
Yeah.
But I decided not to go down the climate change route because that'll make me sad. I looked at I found a couple of towers or buildings called Century.
Oh, nice.
So in Chicago, there is the Century Tower, which it sort of looks like something out of Gotham. It's Gotham City.
Gotham City.
Like these big, chunky chocolate bar skyscrapers, which has got like a really solid base and then an 8-story ziggurat going up the middle of it.
Wow, they're quite like deco-y ones. Nice.
I just wanted the opportunity to say the word ziggurat. It's a banger.
It's Ben's word for the day.
Yeah, my issue with...
Apologies to anyone who's been playing Ziggurat-ageddon, though. You're out now. I'm still in Whamageddon, by the way.
Really? Oh, yeah. So I went out on date.
By the way, does everybody know what Whamageddon is?
Well, I do, but explain to the listeners.
If you from 1st of December till Christmas Day, you have to try and avoid hearing Wham's Last Christmas. So every time I step into Tesco's at the moment, it is running the gauntlet.
That does add like a real...
Don't you dare get it up on your phone. See what you're doing.
I was going to try and block out like 100 people at the same time. I lost in day two at a comedy gig and I accidentally got my wife yesterday. My wife basically... 3 days ago, there's this thing called Whamageddon. Yes, dear. Yes, there is.
Your wife is so competitive.
Yeah, she walked into the living room and I was just like, can you hear that? She was like, what?
from next door.
Yeah.
Classic.
But anyway, yes. Hello to ziggurat lovers in Iran.
Yes.
So the Century Tower in Chicago. I mostly wanted to talk about it because Century Tower is like a bold, exciting name.
Mm.
It has at least five other previous incarnations that are so terribly mundane.
Oh, like different names?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Skyline Century of Progress, which definitely sounds like a cult lives there.
Yeah.
The Lake and Wells building, I mean, a couple of solid middle-order batsmen.
Insurance company.
Yeah. The 201 Tower, which I don't know how it can be called that if it's also the Century Tower.
Isn't there a 101 Tower? Am I imagining that?
That's where all the rats are kept.
There's one for the fact-checkers.
Yeah. The Corn Products building, which is classic middle America, and the Trustee System Service building, which is definitely a shell company for the mafia.
Yeah. That's definitely a fake business name. Yeah. I've never heard one.
The other Century Tower I found is at the University of Florida, and it was built in 1953 to commemorate students and alumni who perished in both of the World Wars. My favourite thing about the Century Tower is that it was built soon after the university became a co-educational institution.
Right.
And so there was an old school joke that states, every time a virgin graduates from the University of Florida, a brick falls off the tower. The article I read here says, it is worth noting that the tower stands in pristine condition. So if you want to get a little bit of undergraduate action, head to the University of Florida.
Well done. Yeah, as soon as it went co-ed, they installed a massive erection on campus.
Yes, and a literal bell.
Well done.
There is a band called Century. There's a couple. There's a French one who looked dull. There is also a metalcore band who have obviously got a lot of shout-outs on this podcast before. Or if you can sum up how awful this band is in one sentence... On March the 9th, 2010, the band posted a cover of Seal's Kiss from a Rose.
A metalcore version of Kiss from a Rose.
On their MySpace page.
Oh, yeah, in 2010.
Yeah.
Is MySpace not dead by then?
Apparently not.
Is MySpace still alive?
I think it still sort of exists.
Should we be getting a MySpace page?
We absolutely should. Right, if you donate to our Patreon, then we will have the best goddamn MySpace page you have ever seen.
Then we're going to have to form a metalcore band. Actually, no, we'd be sort of a Simon and Garfunkel type act, wouldn't we? Tribute act, with the amount of hair that the two of us have between us.
We like each other too much to be Simon and Garfunkel.
Close harmonies are going to be...
I went to cricket, obviously. Did you look at the slowest ever century? Was scored by a Pakistani gentleman called Mudassar Nazar in 1977.
Mm.
And he took 557 minutes, that's almost 10 hours, to score 100 runs. That makes Jeffrey Boycott look like a baseball player.
Yeah.
What was brilliant about this, with this 100 coming up, he got slower and slower and slower. When he reached 99, there was a pitch invasion.
Yeah.
And the Wisden Cricket Bible describes it as saying, after one had been belaboured by police, running fights began. Police were chased across the ground and four found refuge in the England dressing room. Bricks and stones were hurled in the direction of the dressing room and the VIP enclosure. So an early tea was taken. I love that in cricket, the response to a riot is, tea?
Well, the response to it here is kettling sometimes, so it makes sense.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
It's followed by tea.
The rioters then cleared themselves from the ground, which is very well ordered.
They realised, we're never getting out of here, we're just prolonging this.
Yep. He came back and achieved the 100, and then picked up the pace a little bit.
Yeah. I love this.
And eventually ended on 114.
Yeah, he got to 100 after 557 minutes and 419 deliveries, 419 balls. And within the next 30, he got the remaining 14 off the next 30 balls. So that was pretty quick by comparison. It was a test against England. It was only his, I think it was his debut as well.
Really?
Or certainly, if not his debut, he was very young. He was only 21. He was the son of the coach. But he went on to a really good career. He played 76 tests and 21 one-day internationals, and he has coached Pakistan twice as well in his career.
Did he speed up?
In the second innings of this same test, he made 26 off 39 balls.
Well, yeah, he could have thought, I've got my 100, let's just fuck it to the boundary as often as possible.
The match, of course, ended in a draw, as cricket often does after 5 days of playing.
It's the best sport. The other cricket century that I found that I liked. Alistair Cook, possibly the greatest batsman ever to play for England. In his 100th test, he was bowled out for a golden duck.
Yeah,
which, if you don't know, listeners, you're not a cricket loving fans, that means he was bowled out on his very first ball.
The very first ball of the very first, of the very first, was it his very first ball? No, diamond duck is the first one of the whole thing, isn't it?
I think so. And a platinum duck is...
the gift I've got you for our 100th birthday. Yeah, he'd never been out first ball, apparently, in his career until his 100th test.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in Perth, in Australia.
I did go a little bit down the because I mostly avoided time, because the debate about what the worst century is could go on for, like, in terms of time, but I found some fun time facts. A moment is actually a defined unit of time.
Yes, yeah.
In medieval times, the movement of a shadow on a sundial would cover 40 moments in a solar hour. So a moment is about 90 seconds.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So an hour was divided into 4 puncta, quarter hours, or 10 minuta, or 40 momenta. And there's all sorts of weird and wonderful medieval diagrams of circles within circles and ellipses within ellipses,
yeah,
of all these different things. And the Venerable Bede, from my part of the world in Northumberland, was one of the earliest references we have to this idea of a moment. And there was another guy, Roger Bacon, who was like a natural philosopher, who his way of dividing up time was the same way that imperial measurements are done.
Right.
That he divided moments into 12 ounces of 47 atoms.
Oh, God. This is the world's worst 100. It's when they hadn't discovered 100 and, you know, decimal systems and things like that, and would have made it a whole lot easier.
Yeah, the other end of that, I found a length of time in the Indian religion of Jainism.
Mm.
And this length of time is the palya. And a palya is defined as the time it takes to build a cube of lamb's wool. One.
By who? Who's building it?
Hear me out. I haven't told you how big the cube is yet.
Oh, no.
A cube of lamb's wool, 100 voyans high. Now, this
a
is...
A voyan is how long it takes somebody to sing a song.
A voyan is anywhere between 4 and 9 miles.
What?
So, we're talking about a 9-mile-high cube of lamb's wool with one strand being laid down every century. So, the polya is a length of time... So, excuse me, no. So, that is what a polya is, and it's believed that Lord Adinath, who is the first lord... basically their god, came to India 100 billion, and that's an old billion with 12 zeros,
yes,
palyas ago. Is it just a
really large philosophical, like an eon? It's like a large amount of time.
No, it is an eon, but the thing with an eon, from what I learned, is that an eon is basically what you said. It's just a large amount of time.
Yeah.
But the Jainists decided to do the maths. And they did it in only the way that old-timey people who don't really have calculators can do.
Since, you know, industrialisation, a palya has gotten much quicker.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be like they've reclassified the gram recently, or the kilogram.
Yes, they did the kilogram.
Yeah. They'll have to reclassify it, you know, based on, like, a sewing machine.
It's
or a new...
ruined drug deals the
yeah.
world over.
Yeah.
It's just like, excuse me, you call that a gram of coke? I've got some friends in the French consulate who would suggest otherwise. I also found out that where the word century comes from, it's saeculum, which is a Latin... No, excuse me, it's not a Latin word, it's an Etruscan word. And it's basically a length of time roughly equal to the potential lifetime of a person. And they saw it not just as the as the lifetime of a person, but basically the renewal of a human population.
Oh, right.
So the Etruscans would talk about the gods had allotted a certain number of saecula to every people or civilizations. So the Etruscans believed that they had been given 10 saecula.
Right.
And might be true, because they're not here anymore. And saecula was turned into century.
Yeah.
You can sort of see
yeah.
it sort of sounds...
It's in there somewhere.
Like. Which brings me on to my next thing, of the worst centuries are the ones that didn't exist. I wonder whether we spoke about this in the World's Worst Conspiracy episode. There is a German academic called Herbert Illig. He was born in Wohenstrauss, Bavaria.
Ben loves saying German things.
I really do. And he wrote many books, his most famous being... Gesellschaft zur Reconstruction der Menschheits- und Naturgeschichte. Beautiful language.
Beautiful Happy language. Birthday to you too.
Yeah. His hypothesis is that the years 614 to 911 did not exist.
Oh, I've heard of this idea.
Yes.
So just 300 years, because it's the Dark Ages and there's no real recorded history.
That's the theory. And the idea is Otto III, the Holy Roman Emperor, Pope Sylvester II, and possibly also Emperor Constantine VII of Byzantium, basically chopped out 300 odd years so that they could place themselves specifically in 1000 AD.
Yes.
Which would give them, you know, the sort of authority that we are claiming in this 100th episode.
Yeah.
And also would legitimise Otto's claim to the Holy Roman throne. In order to do this, they had to basically erase all of Carolingian history, including Charlemagne.
Yes.
Who, you know, there's quite a lot of evidence for their being. But the way that Illig backed this up was to say that there is not very much archaeological evidence in this period. And there's not that much. I mean, in Britain, I think between the year 500 and 700, the only evidence of there being urban centres is a single spoon.
It's one guy waiting for the restaurant to be invented.
Yeah. Anytime now. I've had to put up with buffets for the past couple of centuries.
I need the Normans to arrive so they can bring waiters.
And make
very diffident French waiters.
Yeah, oh, and bring us some...
We don't have the word for maitre d' yet.
Yeah, all we have is gap year students. And also they use the idea of the complicating the Gregorian and the Julian calendar also being... no, they can't have had that because Pope Gregory didn't exist yet. Scratch that, ignore it. Obviously, this doesn't really hold up to any...
No, because scrutiny. Everyone goes, there's no real evidence in the West. Well, there's lots of evidence in China that those years existed.
Well...
and in Japan.
Precisely. I did have a brief look
at... And in calendars.
Yeah, I had a brief look at Chinese calendars to try and understand. They're called something like sexagenical calendars.
Right.
Because they find the number 6 fascinating for some reason. And the way they divide up hours and minutes and years and decades, and it's... It is the most complicated Wikipedia article I've ever looked at. I've never seen someone manage to turn a calendar into algebra, but somehow the Chinese did it. But that's only a criticism of their time and not centuries. But my suggestion for the world's worst century is actually going to be a car.
Oh.
It's going to be the Buick century. And the Buick century was named this... when it first came out in 1936, because it was the first production automobile capable of reaching the speed of 100 miles an hour.
Oh, right.
And the American executives, one of them had recently returned from a trip in Britain, and told the executives there that in British, going to 100 miles an hour was referred as doing the century. And so they decided that's what their car should be called.
Fair enough.
The specific one I'm going for is the fourth and fifth iterations of it. Because if you look at pictures of it, the first iteration basically looks like every gangster car you've ever seen.
But like the ones at Bugsy Malone.
Exactly. And the second one looks like all the cars that Mr. Miyagi owns in The Karate Kid. You know, like a 50s car with the tail fins that are about 30 feet long. And the third iteration looks like a car from Starsky and Hutch. And the fourth and fifth look like the car used by every single mum in every single 80s kids movie. It is just this horrible, ugly... money-saving shape with unnecessary wood panelling around the outside.
Yes.
And it just...
Love it.
It's awful, but it's the fact that this thing is degraded from this shape of gorgeous rolling curves, and you know that there are several Tommy guns hidden around in it.
Yeah.
Or a car that could leap over a river and do a flip in the air, and two good old boys can jump out the side and say something engaging, but probably slightly racist, to... like a car admittedly used by underdogs in all the good movies, but that just has zero sex appeal. And the it's
by that stage, of course, it's like it's lost its purpose in the sense that it's like, oh great, you can go over 100, so can every fucking car. And it's like someone competing in the Olympic swimming still wearing an old timey like diving suit when everyone's now wearing those really sleek half body skin tight things.
Here's the thing with the 20th century. Because obviously, a lot of people...
Go on, Ben. It's been getting a soft ride for far too long.
Well, obviously, because the easy thing to say about the 20th century is it's got the highest body count, but it's easy to do that because it's got the most people, but also it's had the most technological advances, and many of those saved lives, and also I was born in it.
Yeah.
And what are humans but not the most self-regarding egoists ever? I mean, we don't know that.
Like, no, they're not. I am.
True. What, you're saying you're not human?
Barely. Barely. At the moment, yeah.
I mean, who knows? Giraffes could be really arrogant as well.
Look at them. That's why they have such long necks.
Yeah, they do look very aloof. Anyway, my point being that the 20th century, whilst it improved towards the middle in terms of music... scratch that. Start again. The thing with the 20th century... Here's the thing. And another thing. The thing with the 20th century is that whilst... Oh, it got a little bit messy in the middle. That, at its heart, the early years had the better fashion and style and design.
And like, if you're gonna have mass murder, you may as well look good while it's going on.
Damn right. Damn right. I mean, after the war, we'd run out of money, and it was all about brutalism and ergonomics and things looking like they were designed for mass consumption, whereas the original Buick Century was designed as a luxury item for the elites and for the criminal underground to own. And sure, they were vacuous, society-ruining monsters, but they looked good. And I'm currently feeling like I'm fiddling whilst Rome is burning, and I would like to fiddle on a Stradivarius, not on something cobbled together out of cardboard boxes and string.
Imagine how discouraging that would be if you're a policeman and there's been a bank robbery and you pull up just as the crims are hopping into their getaway car and they've got a Buick Century. You're like, well, this is the only car that can go over 100 miles an hour. We cannot catch these guys. The car chases off.
Yeah, I still don't understand, going on every American movie I've ever seen, why they don't teach... Well, they don't have police cars that can corner.
Yeah. That's and which can withstand the impact of several metal trash cans.
Yeah, a lot of police cars are very explosive.
Yeah. I looked at a little bit of cricket as well. I read the stuff that you read. I also read about John Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of John Hampshire? I think he played about 8 times for England in tests. He was a very well-respected coach and umpire as well later in his life. And he scored what may have been the worst century ever seen at Lord's on his test debut, apparently. He scored a century. England were 37 for 4 against the West Indies, so they were in trouble. If you don't play cricket and you don't know the rules, that's not a great position to be in. And he took to the crease, and he took him 4 hours to make his century. He made 107, and England managed to draw, partly thanks to his input and that of a Yorkshire teammate of his. But Don Carr, who was the assistant MCC secretary at the time, came up to him afterwards and said it was the worst innings he'd ever seen at Lord's.
Wow, what was so bad about it?
It was just really, like, blocking it, nicking it. Apparently, Hampshire himself said that he missed more shots that he played at than he actually hit. He just got lucky with some of the feeling that went on. He just said, I played terribly and somehow got there. So at least he was honest about it. I also read about £100 notes. So the Bank of England did have a £100 note. They don't at the moment. It was discontinued in 1945, along with the £200 note, the £300, the £500, and the £1,000 note. And they were the white note, the big white sheets
with
the Bank of England written on it, the curly writing and the picture of Britannia in the corner. And part of the reason they discontinued them, and indeed they reissued basically all of the national banknotes after the war, was because the Germans had an operation called Operation Bernhard, which saw them in 1943 alone monthly printing 500,000 forged British banknotes from everything from £5 to £50. And the plan that they had was they were going to drop them across the UK and cause chaos and rig the economy and tank it by all of these forgeries entering the circulation. Instead, they actually ended up using a lot of them to pay their own agents across Europe so they could use them. But after the war, a lot of the notes were recovered by the British, and they decided, look, the currency, there's no risk. We can't take any of the risks that the currency is going to be devalued in this way. So they just reissued the whole lot and got rid of the hundreds then. There are still £100 notes in Scotland. The Bank of Scotland issues them, not the Bank of England don't. For example, Clydesdale Bank, which is one of the banks in Scotland that can issue their own notes, has one with Charles Rennie Mackintosh on them. And you can buy a Royal Bank of Scotland, or you can buy a Clydesdale Bank £100 note on eBay. Current bid is £122. Yep. And also you can visit leftovercurrency.com. If you have an old white £100 note, you can still, you know, hand in your old money and get money for it. They will give you £92 for one of them.
I don't understand how that works.
Nor do I, but I'm sure currency experts will explain it to us. I thought the old 100 would be worth way more, given it's, you know, an antique, I suppose, but it's not quite an antique yet.
No, yeah, well, it should be worth loads more because, you know, 3 shillings in the old days is now worth £300,000.
Yes.
So surely by...
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. And after Brexit, we'll be going back to the shillings and yes, we'll all be millionaires. I mentioned in our episode with Oscar Toman about the Wordsworth's resignation about the Chiltern mm-hmm. Hundreds. Do you remember this? So if you want to resign from the Houses of Parliament in Britain, the House of Commons, you have to take... You don't say, I'm resigning. You take an office of profit from the Crown because you're not allowed... earn money from the Crown at the same time as being an MP. And so a lot of people do this thing where they take the office of the Crown Steward and Bailiff of the Chiltern Hundreds of Stoke, Desborough and Burnham. Or you take the office of the Crown Steward of the Manor of Northstead is the other one you can get. Mm-hmm. But taking the Chiltern Hundreds is the phrase that they use when you say that someone's going to resign because your Parliament is a fucking museum.
Taking the Chiltern Hundreds, that feels a little bit like the parliamentary equivalent of the euphemism people use when they talk about a dying pet went to the farm.
Yeah, yeah, he's gone to take the Chiltern Hundreds. I read about some more sport. Golf. So, obviously, 100 is sort of a landmark score in cricket.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be anywhere near 100 when you're playing golf.
Mate, I dream of being near 100 when I play golf.
Well, for listeners who don't know, the standard score on a golf course tends to be about 72. That's if you score a 4 on all 18 holes. So they used to call it level 4s, is scoring a 72. There are some par 70 and par 71 courses, but generally 72 is average. So if you shoot a 68, you're considered to be 4 under par. Or if you shoot a 76, you're 4 over par. And I thought, well, surely a pro won't have reached, you know, anywhere near 100 in a competition. Surely not. At qualifying for the US Open this year, a golfer called Clifton McDonald was trying to qualify for the US Open, big competition, at Silver Lakes in Alabama in Georgia. Which is confusing, Alabama and Georgia. And the US Open is a competition anyone can enter. Mm-hmm. If you have generally, they'll say you have to have a handicap of sort of 2 or better. So that means that you might score a 74 on a par 72, and those 2 shots are cut off, and you would score par. So Clifton clearly thought he was decent enough to try and qualify for the US Open. But apparently, not so much. He shot 127 or 55 over par.
I've done that.
Yeah. Yeah, you could try and qualify for the US Open then. The guy behind him said he was wearing these, like, really, these pleated cotton trousers on a really hot day in Georgia, wandering around. His scorecard included a 14 on one hole and an 11 on another. It's a real car crash. It's a phenomenal thing to look at in its own way. But he's not on his own because there's a golfer called Julio Bell from Colombia who played on a web.com tour event.
I thought you were going to say played on webbed feet.
He webbed feet.
Obviously means the water hazards are no issue at all.
Yeah, it's quite easy. So the web.com tour is the level below the main PGA tour in America. So the top 125 players qualify for the US Tour, the PGA Tour, and then the level below are the web.com tour. And he is a former boxer who took up golf 5 years ago. He plays off apparently a handicap of 1, so he's an amateur. But they
you say
him.
He plays apparently off a handicap of 1. He went to the handicap authorities and go, I'm playing off 1, all right?
That seems very much... The report I read also made mention of his sort of extensive business contacts in Colombia. I don't know entirely what they're in reference to. But he was invited as an amateur to come and play in a web.com tour event in 2016 and shot scores of 99 and 92. Which you would imagine would mean he would never get invited back. No, sirree! He was invited back again 2 years later, this year in 2018, lining up in a competition, taking the place of someone else who actually tries to make their living off golf. and he shot 93 in his first round and 105 in his second round, leaving him 63 shots behind the halfway leader at that point. But, you know, maybe he thought he was playing golf boxing, like chess boxing. Okay, I'm at the halfway point. I'm really down, but now the gloves are on.
Yeah, all I need to do is to knock out the other players. Yeah,
all 128 other players in the field. As we've reached 100, I thought I'd look at old people.
Oh, of course.
People who reach the ages of 100 and things like that. So if you reach 100, you're called a centenarian. If you reach 110 or more, you're called a super centenarian.
Sure, not a decacentenarian.
No, super centenarian. Much better.
Yeah.
you get a cape and everything. In Britain, you obviously, we mentioned, you get a telegram from the Queen. It used to be a telegram. I think it's a letter now. And indeed in the Commonwealth, your family can apply 3 weeks beforehand on the monarchy's website. And you get a card on your 100th birthday. And you also get one every year from 105 as well onwards. They make sure they put a new photo of the Queen on the letters each year, so you're not getting the same one.
Good. Do they... I want to know what the message is in the letters, especially the one after 105, when it's just like, bloody hell, you're still going.
It reads, I am so pleased to know that you are celebrating your 100th birthday.
Uh-huh.
From the Queen.
Does she sign it?
Well, I mean, she may have signed it, you know, using one of those electronic signer things. Mm. However, when the Queen Mother turned 100 in August 2000, she was the first royal to reach 100 years old, obviously the mother of the Queen. She shared her birthday with 11 other people, so there were 12 letters sent out that day. But hers was delivered by the royal postman, Tony Nichols, who drove down the man in his little red van and handed it to the Queen. She had her equerry, Captain William de Rouet, open it with his sword as a letter opener. Because, you know, she was 100 and mental. the Queen had written a different message inside it, wishing her all the best in the family, and signed it Lilibet, which was her pet name, obviously. You also get gifts in other... by the way, the tradition started under Edward VII. In 1908, his secretary wrote to the Reverend Thomas Lord of Horncastle, saying, I'm commanded by the King to congratulate you on the attainment of your 100th year after a most useful life. And people liked the idea so much that, again, eventually it became formalised about a decade later as... tradition.
What a lovely way to say it. Well done on living to 100 after a most useful life, rather than why are you not dead yet, you waste of space.
Really useful life. You can stop working now because it's still the old days. In Japan, centenarians get a silver cup, mm-hmm, and a certificate from the Prime Minister on Respect for the Aged Day. They have an annual holiday called Respect for the Aged Day on the third Monday in September. So I don't. It seems like you don't get it on your birthday, but you get it on this date. Everyone in the country gets it. Which is tricky because apparently Japan in 2017 had 67,824 centenarians.
They're amassing an army.
Yeah. I mean, the UN have estimated that by 2050 they might have as many as 250,000, maybe even a million centenarians in the country. And Japan has obviously, it's famously long-lived, yeah, country. Has the most centenarians per 100,000 people of any country in the world. According to a UN estimate, there are about 6.2 centenarians per 100,000 people in the world. In Japan, there are 48 for every 100,000.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, it's bonkers. Portugal seems to be next on about 39. And the other thing I read is in Ireland, you get money for turning 100 in Ireland. You get €2,540 as part of the centenarian bounty and a letter from the president.
The centenarian bounty?
Yeah, the one that nobody wants.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds a lot more like someone dressed as Boba Fett comes out and goes, well, you're done now.
Yeah, yeah, my granny sadly away passed at 99 this year, so just short. Just short. That was all we wanted her to hang on for, was the bounty.
Yeah, well, you needed some rioters to get onto the pitch during her birthday party. Yeah. Then we could go and have a nice tea.
But then I was reading about the really long-lived people in history. Mm-hmm. Only 46 people in recorded history have been confirmed as reaching 115 years old or more, mm-hmm, which is amazing. You might have heard of Jeanne Calment, the French lady, who is regarded as the person who's lived the longest of anyone in history, 122 years and 164 days from France. She died in 1999, I believe, or 97. She's from Arles in the south of France, and she attributed her long life to olive oil and a good diet and her name as well. Calmon means I'm calm. Kept it calm. And she was... There is a theory about her. I don't know if you've read this, have you? That she was her own daughter. That actually Jean Calment died in the 30s. And to avoid paying inheritance tax, her daughter took her place. Yeah.
Oh.
I know. This is a theory that's just been released this year. I came across it last night. It's a Russian gerontologist has put forward this theory, and he's gotten some statisticians to help him look into it. And essentially, they were looking into a lot of sort of inconsistencies and, you know, little queries that they had about Jean. Things like the fact that she could stand unaided well into her hundreds. There's photos of her standing in at the age of 106 or 108, which is very unusual. Her height at the time of her death, coming up to the time of her death, was only a couple of inches shorter than it was in her youth by the look of things, whereas you should be 6 or 7 centimetres, right? You should be 6 or 7 centimetres maybe shorter by that stage. Cognitive tests they performed when she was in her old age showed a brain capacity of about sort of an 80 or a 90 year old rather than someone into their hundreds. And so, yeah, there's a theory that her daughter, Yvonne, took over her identity in 1934 when she died. And one of the there's lots of suggested reasons. There's photos of them that make that she looks much more like her daughter than herself. Maybe the most interesting little detail is that Jean used to talk about how she was brought to school by their maid, the family maid, whose name escapes me, but they looked into that maid, and that maid was 10 years younger than Jean Calment is. So they suggest that maybe it was Yvonne. She was looking after Yvonne rather than her.
It's nothing sacred.
I know, it's really interesting, and people still... officially, she's the world's oldest person, but there is now a shadow of suspicion over her. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that breaking more in 2019, gerontology fans.
I'm sure there is a few people who claim to be like, have been 140 and 150. Like, I think old people in Asia who, like, well, we've not got a birth certificate, but I'm definitely that old.
Yes, yeah. And so they're very, particularly Guinness World Records, she is verified as being because they have all the documentation and things like that. Actually, someone pointed out that because she's the first verified supercentenarian, I think, in France, it's such an odd coincidence that she also happens to have lived the longest of anyone in history. I think it's a really weird, she's the first one that identified when maybe verification processes wouldn't have been so hot.
Yeah, I think there are going to be members of the Nigerian football team who live longer than that here.
Yes. Funnily enough, hang on, before I get onto that, I do want to talk a little bit about the record for longest living person. The current, on day of recording, the oldest living person is Kane Tanaka, a lady from Japan. In fact, if you look at the oldest living person record, when it passed from person to person, it is almost always a woman. She is 115 years old and 342 days, I believe, today. And she has held the record now for 191 days.
I want to know that she gets like a belt, like a boxer or a wrestler.
Well, I think as soon as the previous one dies, Guinness fly really quickly to whoever the next person is, because there is like a habit of people only holding the record for a very short period of time. Jean Calment held it for 9 years, but generally it's a year and a bit at most that people hold for. In fact, Emma Tillman of the United States was the world's oldest person for 4 days in 2007 before she died. And Gertrude Weaver, again of the US, held the record for 6 days in 2015. So, it's one of those records that it's nearly like, oh, the Grim Reaper arriving. Oh, I've got the record. It means I'm about to die.
it's a really slow moving geriatric version of The Ring.
Yeah.
When Norris McWhirter or his sons from the Guinness World Records turns up, it's like, well, my time is coming.
Yeah. I've also read, you mentioned Nigeria there. Well, some of the oldest people in prison, one of the oldest people in prison is in Nigeria. Celestine Egbunuche is in prison in Enugu in Nigeria. He is currently aged 100. He's been in prison for 18 years for organising a murder along with his son Paul. They're currently campaigning to try and get him released. And I also read about old Bill Wallace. They put the old in like inverted commas on his Wikipedia entry to suggest that it was his nickname. You're like, no, it's also just factually correct. because he was in prison. He was imprisoned in J Ward in Melbourne for shooting a man over an argument over a cigarette in a cafe in 1926. And he remained in prison till his death in 1989, a prison term of 63 years, and he died a month before his 108th birthday in prison. I mean, you know, you sort of think, oh, well, you know, he's getting on a bit. Surely they can release him back into society. No, apparently, at the age of 100, he stabbed an inmate in his hand with a fork.
Good lad.
Trying to take the bread off his plate. And he refused. They kept saying, you know, if we can talk, get you to talk to the doctors and get an assessment, you might get released. And he just refused to talk to doctors ever. So he was never able to be sort of assessed whether he'd be appropriate for re-release. He probably had a wife and kids. He never talked about them. Maybe there was trouble at home. He just wanted to get away. And the government eventually, after his 100th birthday, there was a bit of sort of public interest in trying to get him released. And the government, after a 3-year campaign, agreed to release him. And he said, don't be fucking silly, I live here. So, yeah, he decided to stay until his death. And I read also about secrets that people have for reaching the age of 100. Edith Atkinson Wiley of Montana, who reached the age of 106, she says she eats Cheetos while watching the 5 o'clock news, and that's what keeps her going.
I mean, if that were true, then every stoner currently living would end up living to 100.
Yeah, I think they might. Or at least they'll stretch time enough that they feel like they're 100. Margaret Young of Sutton in the UK says, be happy and have plenty of cups of tea. Was the most British thing ever. 108th birthday this year, she had a tea party to celebrate, naturally enough. Ernest San of Minnesota says, no skipping any meals, have breakfast, lunch and dinner. She's reached 110 years old, and she also suggests eating dark chocolate, bananas and ice cream, essentially a banana split, and shovel snow. That'll keep you fit.
This is all horseshit.
And particularly after climate change, we're not going to have any snow to shovel anyway, so that's going to bring, you know, the worldwide age down.
But why are we listening to these people? None of them are an expert on lifestyle
and
age.
I love that thing of everyone gets to the age of 100 and go, let's think of there's a thing I must have done to make me live so long, rather than like a thing you haven't done, like staying away from something or just, you know, having a particularly good heart or something like that. No, I always used to sit on the swings in the park. And that must be what kept me young.
But if you pay attention to every single thing that every single centenarian has done, you're not going to have enough time in your life to do anything yeah. else.
Well, you could follow the example of Teresa Rowley, who reached 104. She drinks a can of Coke, Diet Coke, every day.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, she was 64 when the Diet Coke was actually invented, so she started a bit late. So at best, it's proven that you can reach the age of 40 while drinking Diet Cokes. And my favourite advice comes from Jessie Gallen of Scotland, who died aged 109 in 2015. And she attributed her long life to staying away from men. They're just more trouble than they're worth.
Wow, there's nothing better than an angry centenarian lesbian.
And you did mention it would be hard to pick what the worst century to live in would be. I would suggest maybe the 6th century of the Common Era, which featured the Plague of Justinian, which we talked about with Mike Stukebury, which from the year 541 to 542, killed as many as 25 to 50 million people, which was about 13% of the world's population at the time, basically around the Europe.
She got a 1 in 6 chance of being killed.
Yeah, 1 in 8, basically, yeah. And
that's what I said, 1 in 8.
Yeah. And that was based in Europe and the Mediterranean, of course. But that came about 5 or 6 years after a really extreme weather condition just hit the entire planet. There were crop failures, famine, a dust veil all over the world, possibly a volcano erupted or a comet hit. They notice, dendrochronologists have noted, stunted growth in tree bark from the time. And it suggests that year, the year 535, 536, was the coldest year for 1,500 years. And the thing that, like, obviously the Plague of Justinian, terrible, affected lots of Europe. But these weird worldwide weather conditions, they're literally planet-wide. In Ireland, there are the annals writing about the crops failing. It's noted in Byzantine history. There's snow in the summer in China. There's drought in Peru. There's a really dense, dry fog all over the Middle East. People were burying their gold in Scandinavia as sort of offerings to the gods to make it stop. And it must have been absolutely terrifying at these times. And then 6 years later, the plague hits. You go, what the hell? And some people have attributed the decline in the city of Teotihuacan in the Mesoamerica in Mexico, which was one of the great cities of the time, had 250,000 people living in it. That basically, the failure of the crops led to unrest, and that led to riots and stuff in the city, and eventually the decline of the civilization. And also someone has suggested that it drove the Mongol hordes westward towards Europe, because they didn't have any food in their own regions in Asia as well. So
what, in the 6th century?
No, it's suggested that the reason they edged towards Europe starting then was
But Genghis Khan and all that is until
Different Mongols.
Okay,
Different Mongols. But again, these are...
The next one's down in the telephone directory.
Yeah, that's... The Mongol Fitzhyams, you know. The double-barreled Mongols. But yeah, I think 6th century wouldn't be a great era to live. But I am going to suggest... We obviously had centenary celebrations of the World War One ending this year, the centenary, on the 11th of November. But Ben, did you miss the celebration on the 7th of November 2018?
What was that?
It was the celebration of the false armistice. Yep. 4 days before the actual armistice took place, rumour got out that the war was over, and mass celebrations took place in France, the UK, the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Cuba, Argentina and Mexico on November 7th, 1918. Essentially what happened, the Germans sent a message calling for a ceasefire in a region in France so their negotiators could go and meet the Allies.
Mm-hmm.
And the message was intercepted. And the ceasefire said, the message said there's a ceasefire from 3 o'clock to facilitate talks. And they just thought, ceasefire, the war's over, brilliant. And the word spread. They tried to keep it secret in, you know, they didn't send any official communiques, but private telephone conversations, word of mouth. And it got to the US embassy in France. And then they sort of disseminated it to military chiefs in America, and a couple of them passed it on to the odd journalist here and there. And Reuters bypassed the official censors in the United Kingdom in such a hurry were they to get the news out that the war was over, when actually it actually wasn't, sparking wild celebrations in the street. My favourite story about it is that in Victoria, in British Columbia, news came at about 10 o'clock in the morning that the war had ended. And basically, the place went crazy. There were boats blowing their whistles in the harbour. Offices and work sites emptied. Bosses were like telling people to get back to work. And people were like, no, the war's over. We're having a street party. The Premier, John Oliver, called for a public holiday. And by afternoon, fireworks, songs and parades were taking place in the city. And essentially, the place, obviously the war had been going on and people were dying, and the Canadians were very, very badly affected. I think over 200 Canadians died in the last few days of the war alone. So that period after the false armistice, as well as with Spanish flu had started to hit. There'd been a boat sinking in the harbour near Victoria in British Columbia, and they just needed some good news. So as soon as they heard, the war's over, brilliant, street parties galore. And I think you sort of go, oh, it's fake. Let's just keep going. Let's just pretend we don't know it's fake at that point.
This sort of feels like in a cup final, someone scoring a goal and it being declared offside and no one noticing.
Yeah, yeah.
And the entire team have got their jerseys off and are wanging them round their head.
The managers run up the steps to grab the FA Cup trophy. So I'm going to suggest that the century celebrations of the false armistice. So false celebrations of a false celebration would be my world's worst century.
So basically, we're going toe-to-toe between the false celebration of the end of the greatest war of all time up until that point, or a shit car. I think you win this one.
I think it's a drive over. And actually, I've been celebrating for 20 minutes. I actually had already ordered some fireworks. Brilliant. Yeah, I think it seems sort of suitably crappy, a terrible celebration of something that wasn't quite timed right, given the number we've just reached.
Yeah.
Before we go, I've got to give you some of the world's worst news of the week. This obviously, Christmas is coming, and with Christmas comes terrible Christmas experiences that you can go to. You know, we always have a crappy winter wonderland. Mm-hmm. The headlines are winter blunderland or whatever. This comes from an event in Cambridgeshire. So at St. Ives in Cambridgeshire, an irate Santa Claus astonished children this week when he burst out of his grotto during a fire evacuation, shouting and swearing at them while tearing off his hat and beard. He's apparently told attendees to get the fuck out after a smoke machine at a family-friendly rave in the same building as his grotto set off a fire alarm. So he was trying to, like, meet children and stuff, and the rave next door that was going on caused an evacuation, and that apparently really, really sent him over the edge.
I've got the flip side of that story. My mate Rowan, her little boy Otis, who is a superbly naughty six-year-old, apparently she took him to see Santa in the mall, and Santa was like, if you're not a good boy, then you won't get any presents. And Otis just turned, looked at him, blew a raspberry and fucked off.
Yes, Otis. That was amazing. This was at Festival Event St. Ives, apparently, that organised this event. And the DJ who was running the event downstairs said that Santa was raging because they booked a kids' rave on the same day kids were going to see Santa upstairs above the event. He probably sat there trying to talk the kids with thumping music playing and was pissed off. The fire alarm going off was probably the final straw for him.
I love the fact, thought of all these pilled up 7-year-olds going upstairs and just going, what do I want? What do I want? I'll tell you what I want. I need some water. Water's what I want.
Typically you have the
parents going up to Santa Claus and going, what's your name, where you're from and what you want?
Oh, Christmas. That's it. That's all we got for you, folks. Thank you again for listening to 100 episodes of us now. Please do stick with us for the next 100. And we'll have to come up with a suitable celebration when we reach 200.
Yeah, we've already started celebrating that now.
To get in there nice and early. Thank you so much for listening to Westwood Forward. Goodbye.
Bye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.